Welcome to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Our mission is to bring you discussions on a wide array of topics in the coaching world to grow players on and off the court. You can connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, and also reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Now, here's your host, Coach Mike Hernandez.
Thank you guys so much for joining us here, and welcome back to another episode. So glad that you're here joining us wherever in the world you're listening to us from, whatever platform you're listening to us on. As always, thank you guys so much for the support, the kind messages, tweets, emails, all that great stuff that you've sent the show's way. Really can't believe that we're almost here on year four, and thank you guys for being a part of that journey, whether you just started or whether you've been there with us since the beginning. Really do appreciate you tuning in, and this is going to be a fun episode because we get to really get into the mental side of basketball. I've had so many great conversations about X's and O's and culture and all sorts of aspects over these 200 plus episodes. But I really like to be able to have this conversation because it incorporates a couple different things, talking about the aspect of psychology, the aspect of how group dynamics work and how all of those things kind of factor into a program buy-in, a team coming together, and a team functioning at its highest level. So really excited for this one, and hopefully you are too, to get into that mental dynamic of the game. Also excited that my guest is part of a coaching staff of which who I have interviewed a member of that coaching staff before. So I have interviewed Coach Jolie Carswell in late January, who is in Fort Scott Community College. And I'm also happy to be joined today by a member of her staff. Coach Caleb Tipton is here joining us today. Coach, really appreciate you coming on here and talking to us tonight. How are things going?
Things are going great. Thank you so much for having me. And, I really am looking forward to the opportunity to talk basketball. You know, not many better things to talk about.
Absolutely. 100% agree. Let's start with you, Coach. Where's this great game of basketball taking you? Where's your coaching journey taking you? And how did you ultimately end up here at Fort Scott Community?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I think the journey is everything. And, you know, I've been able to live and to coach basketball in a couple different states. Originally, I was born down south, and then I grew up in New England, and now I'm coaching here in the Midwest. So the journey is awesome, you know, getting to meet so many people, travel, and, you know, have lifelong friends and coaches and having the opportunity to learn. It's a really great thing. You know, for me, I knew I wanted to coach whenever I went to my first ever varsity basketball game. I was in eighth grade living in New Hampshire, and, you know, we had a smaller high school, but I went to the game, packed house. You know, everyone was there tight, you know, standing room only, coaches were wearing suits, you know, yelling at kids. It looked so intense. And it was then that's whenever I decided that I wanted to be a coach whenever I got older. You know, I always grew up playing three sports. I loved sports. And, you know, to be able to make a living coaching is just a dream come true. From eighth grade, you know, most kids are focused on playing sports. And from then I was already dissecting, you know, what my coaches were doing and how that would help me be a better coach. So I really got in at a young age, you know, as soon as I could. I started coaching, you know, second graders, you know, teaching them how to dribble, teaching them the basics. And I think that that's a good background for a lot of coaches to have. I know sometimes in college coaching, you get kids that were really great college players, and then they transition to coaching and they immediately start coaching at, you know, the college or high school level. But I think having that youth background and experience definitely helps, because you're really breaking the game down. Yeah. And then from there, I just, you know, saw the opportunity to keep growing, you know, started coaching middle school, AAU, got into high school, and, you know, now having the opportunity to be in college. I was a student assistant coach in college as well. And that was a great experience, you know, so I really started, you know, wiping sweat off the floor and being a student of the game. And to now have the opportunity to, you know, be coaching in college, it's a dream come true. And, you know, hopefully I'll get the opportunity to keep learning and keep moving up the coaching ladder and keep impacting lives along the way.
And I love what you kind of mentioned about being able to, you know, start coaching with such a young age group where, you, like you mentioned, you're really breaking down the game. And I'm curious, are there even aspects of that coaching experience that you can even draw from at where it is that you're at now at the college level?
Oh, definitely. And one thing that I tell players all the time that I coach now that I'm at a higher level is one of my favorite groups that I ever got to coach was the first team that I got to coach. I was 17 years old and I got the chance to coach a fourth and fifth grade rec team. And to this day, those kids play harder than any other team I ever coached. I had those kids taking charges and everything, and they were so bought in and it was fun. And I remember, refs would come to me, it would take them a second to realize that at that level, fourth and fifth grade, that they were intentionally trying to take a charge. But once they picked up on it, it was a comical thing. So, I tell my kids now, if I can get fourth graders to take charges, you're 19, 20 years old, like get on the floor, sacrifice your body. So it's fun. It's funny in that aspect, but it's been a process. And I think one thing that I've learned too throughout coaching at the youth level is the importance of support from the families, right, in the communities. I've seen a lot of coaches, get good and bad reps from, how they are, perceived in the community. And, I've been thankful and been blessed to always, have players that want to be coached and parents that want their kid to be coached hard. So I've always been very thankful for that.
Yeah, that's funny. My first coaching experience, I was 17 years old and I was coaching like sixth graders as well. And I don't know if I had them taking charges as much as I should have been as a senior in high school, but like, man, that's it's still something I vividly remember. I feel like in some ways I have more vivid memories from that coaching experience than even some of my previous years that I've had recently, just because there's just so much happening and I learned so much from it and reflect so much about it that, it's. That's great though. Getting charges in fourth grade though, that's awesome. I mean,
Yeah,
that's
they were
about
very
it.
bought in. They were
Yeah,
very bought
they
in, and I
have to
think
be.
at that age. Oops, sorry.
No, go ahead. I said you better be a fourth grade. You have to have a lot of buy-in if you're gonna be taking charges and everything at that level, fourth grade.
Yeah, they don't understand the word, no, and at that age they really don't understand, what failure is necessarily. So it's definitely a way different type of, coaching environment. And obviously, you're looking to make it, more fun, and you want to teach them life lessons along the way. But it's definitely a way different approach.
That's funny. Coach, let me ask you X's and O's. And I know I had a conversation also with Coach Carswell about this as well, but I want to give you an opportunity to talk about X's and O's. Let me ask you about things that you're passionate about, X's and O's wise. Where do you kind of fit in terms of what your input is in terms of how things are run or how things are run schematically on an X's and O's side. What sort of things do you like and are passionate about offensively and defensively?
And that's a great question. And it's one of my favorite questions to answer. And I always throw people for a loop, hey, are you an offensive coach or are you a defensive coach? The answer is neither. I'm a rebounding coach. That's one thing that happens on both sides of the court, and that's very important. I'm also very big into numbers and statistics. Numbers are very important. And generally, if you are able to see team statistics, you can be a very good defensive team and still be at the bottom of the conference. But there's one stat that really stands out, and that's the rebounding margin. Generally, if you have one of the worst rebounding margins, you're going to have one of the worst records. So to me, rebounding is very important. Every possession starts, begins, and ends with a rebound. But defensively, I like to be able to mix it up. Like I talked about earlier about living in different parts of the country, the game's played a little bit differently. In New England, you're more likely to see a lot more sets being run. A lot of zones. In places that don't have shot clocks, they're gonna milk the clock. I've seen some 15 to 13, score games.
Oof. Oh
That's just
boy.
how the style is.
Yeah, that's
It's tough to
rough.
watch, but and
Yeah.
I'm a big believer for the shot clock, because of that. But
Yeah.
not all high schools are able to implement that, unfortunately. But man to man is great. If I have a team, I would love to defensively press all game, not all game, but for majority of the game, and be able to be into man as well. I've been able to work on multiple different staffs, and I think that that's a great thing. Also, between when I was in high school and college, I had six different coaches in 8 years. So being
That's
able to
ooh.
pick their brain
That's a
and
lot, yeah.
It is. And, you know, different situations happened and, you know, just ended up in different coaches.
Sure.
But being able to learn and to have so many different drills and practice plans, it was a blessing for someone who was really interested at an early age on, you know, what works and what doesn't work. What do I like and not like, you know, steal some drills from people and not. But, you know, man-to-man's the way to go. I'm not a fan of pack line. Personally, I call it whack line. And it's just from my experience, you know, there's coaches that, as long as you get your kids playing hard, whatever you run, you know, it can be successful, whether it's a 2-3 zone or, you know, a 1-3-1. But to me, I think pack line, you have to have guys that are really good at closing out. If not, then that defense isn't going to be successful. And especially now where, you know, teams are jacking up threes at a higher rate than ever before.
Yeah, a lot of shooters on the court too. Well, exactly. Maybe shooter. I don't know. People who will shoot. Well, maybe they'll make them too. But yeah. No, I know what you mean.
There's takers and there's makers. You know, anyone can be a taker. You know, but so I just think pack line really, doesn't work out if your kids aren't bought in and they're not closing out hard. So I'm a man to man, no middle guy, and offensively too. Like I said, New England, you're running a lot of sets. Since I've been here in the Midwest, I'm definitely more of a transition coach now, because a transition can be any type of defense. If you can get the ball down the court, you can beat a zone. You can beat, you know, a man and get a quick open shot and knock it down. So my philosophy has definitely changed over the years. And now I'm using sets more in ATO situations or, you know, if I really need a bucket late game. But offensively, I like to run, be fast. And defensively, I like the man-to-man, no middle. And, you know, being able to run different zones.
I know. You bring up a great point, though, that regionally the game does look a lot different. You know, even, you know, I grew up in Illinois and I think of the way that the game was played, and this was, you know, 15 years ago, but, you know, comparing that and how I still feel it's kind of played in the Midwest, you got to, you know, where I am now in Arizona, it is different. You know, we have the shot clock now here in Arizona, which has definitely, you know, changed the way things are, but for sure, like you go in these different parts and you just kind of see the way the game's changed. And, you know, for you, it allows you to kind of pick up just on regional things. But then, like you mentioned, all the coaches that you worked on, you kind of can take everything from everywhere and from everyone, sort of thing. I'm going to ask you, because you're a rebounding person, before we get in this topic, about what do you like to do to drill or practice or improve rebounding? Is there a secret sauce to it, so to speak? What goes into getting a great rebounder, a great rebounding team?
Yeah, that's a great question, you know, because it doesn't always work out the way you plan sometimes. Oh. But with that being said, I always paint the picture to my teams that we need to be good at the things that it doesn't take a good basketball player to be good at. I can take rebounding is a want thing, right? Rebounding is a, you know, I'm going to go get the ball thing. You know, I use the example, I can take anyone out of the hallway in a high school and teach them how to box out. Communicating on defense, right? Things like that. You don't have to be a good basketball player to be able to talk, right? Anyone can talk. Mm-hmm. So to me, it's all about how you paint the picture and why it's important. You know, I've seen a lot of games lost when you are the superior team to giving up second chance points. That's one way that a team that, you know, might not be as skilled as your team can come back in a game and beat you, giving them the opportunity to get second chance points. But I think with practices, you need to make them more intense than the games. You know, there's certain drills and stuff you can do, and maybe you can do drills where, you know, you don't call fouls. And, you know, it toughens the kids up. You know, it makes them really want the basketball and value the basketball. You know, maybe you can do a drill. I've seen coaches do drills where the ball goes out of bounds, but the kids are still fighting for the ball.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, exactly encourage what talking about. You know, encourage them. You know, as long as we're not, you know, punching each other in the face and it, you know, doesn't turn into a scuffle, you know.
MMA fight, us. Yeah.
And, you know, if I have a team that I think is, you know, playing a little on the soft side, I got this good drill where – you put the ball right in the middle of the half court circle right there. You have one person on the outside, one on the inside, and they got 5 seconds to stop them from touching the basketball. And you can do whatever you got to do to stop them from touching that basketball. Most of the time it turns into, you know, jersey pulling and, you know, them grabbing each other, but they have a fun time with that drill. And, you know, it really, you want to talk about an intense practice and an intense drill. That's one that'll make your team want the basketball.
I like that a lot. And I also like the, what you mentioned about, I think sometimes as coaches, and I'm one of them, like, who can maybe try and dress things up and complicate things with terminology, or make in some ways the game seem so much more intricate and complicated and complex than it is. But some of these things, like you mentioned about rebounding and others and communication, these are just skills that players can, you could teach it to them, but that idea of, bringing that will out, or, just kind of explaining, like, hey, you don't need a lot of basketball skill to communicate or talk, maybe teach you a little bit on what to say, but just the act of speaking itself is not something that you need to have this, crazy amount of skill to do. And I think that that is hopefully something that might be encouraging to coaches who might have teams that are not as skilled, that they can, focus on the things, which is a lot of basketball elements that don't require, high levels of understanding of the game.
Definitely,
Yeah.
100%, and that's what I say. In order to be successful, you got to be good at the things that it doesn't take being a good basketball player to be good at, and then the rest will, fall into place.
I like that. All right, coach, let's get into some psychology here. This is something you're passionate about. So let's talk about the psychology aspect of a team buying into the vision of the program, the culture, buying into each other. What goes into getting a team to click and really buy in and play for each other?
And it's very situational, and there's a lot that goes into it. I could probably talk, for 24 hours about different scenarios and, different ways to go about it. I had a football coach that I played for, and he was a an older gentleman. He was scary. He didn't yell much, but when he talked, you listened. He kind of looked like Stone Cold Steve Austin. Very intimidating, but he would always say, trust is the second most important word in the dictionary in the Bible. And on our shirts, we had the word trust, big on our backs, and there was a chain link around the word trust, and it was tight. And he would always talk about the importance of that word and how we can't have any issues in our chain, right? If that chain gets broken, we got problems. And there's so many pieces that surround that word, but it's together and it's in a circle and it's strong, right? So I always love that visualization, and the way he would talk about it really always bought me in, so I always try to carry that down. One thing that I will say about having kids bought in, I think if you have a good reputation as a coach, that definitely helps.
Yep.
That first year, can be very difficult. I was very fortunate that, when I was in Maine, coaching AAU and then coaching high school basketball, that my first year in the community, I had a very talented team, and we went 24-2. So right once I was coaching in that community, that helped my reputation. So kids were already more likely to want to play for me and to want to be bought in and do things that we were doing that made us successful. And that really opened the door for me in a lot of different ways, and getting to coach a bunch of different teams and to, really get known as a pretty good high school coach and a good trainer. So having a good reputation is very important. Winning at the end of the day, winning helps a lot. And I think it's important to align team goals. If you
Okay.
want to talk about strategy and buy-in, one thing that I always do is I always have individual meetings with players, always, at the
Okay.
beginning of the season and once a week. And in the beginning of the season, that first meeting is very important. I talk to the kids about two things, really. I talk to them about what's their individual goals and what's their team goals. And 9 out of 10 times when you talk about team goals, they always say, I want to win championship, or I want to go undefeated. 9 out of 10 times it's going to happen. So now it's okay. How are we going to get there, guys? As individuals, you all told me, hey, we want to win a championship. Now I'm going to show you how to get there, but we got to do things. And I think practicing for perfection is important. If we're not doing a drill right, I can make kids do the same drill for a long time until we get it perfect. If not, we're running. And normally that helps build the skill and build what I want and set the standard. Setting the standard's important. And if you say something as a coach, you got to stand by it and you got to do it. I've
Yeah.
seen coaches that maybe promise kids, hey, I'm going to get you more run next game or stuff like that, and then they don't end up doing it. If you ever do
Uh-oh.
that to a
You're gonna
kid, you
lose that
lose.
kid. Yep.
Yes. And then that's they're done. And then that, really eats up the rest of the team, right? So another thing too, I try to focus on is paying attention to the back half of your lineup. I think is very important, especially for teams that are later in the season and making runs. You got to hold everyone accountable, and you can't have favorites. You got to be fair and you got to be tough. But I see a lot of times the kids that may not play as much near the end of the season, they get really, upset with their lack of playing time. And, you know, it leaks into the rest of the team, and, you know, it can cause a cancerous attitude. But I think having those individual meetings really helps a lot with that. So you can help track progress with their individual goals and how they're working towards it. But having conversations and having communication with everybody and, you know, being hard on everybody and being fair is extremely important.
And I think what you said, maybe in theory, can sound, pretty simple, but that is definitely a time commitment. I can't imagine the amount of time that could go into those conversations. I don't know if you have a schedule, how much time it takes, but to do that every single week is a huge investment of time. And I think that, you know, if a coach, you know, hears this and is like, oh, you know, sounds like a great idea, I should do that. Like, just be prepared that if you want to commit to that and really do that, you really got to be all in yourself as a coach and make sure that you're intentional if you're planning of it.
Well, you know, 100%. And I think psychologically, really the biggest picture that I try to paint for the kids is that they know that I'm dedicated when it comes to coaching basketball, and they know that I'm willing to do whatever it takes in order to be successful at coaching basketball. And you want them to learn that if they are, you know, as bought in and they work as hard as, you know, they do towards becoming better basketball players, and, you know, they see how I coach, you know, hopefully that will carry on with them in life, right? So, you know, if they want to go be a doctor and go be a lawyer, how do you go about being the best doctor and lawyer that you can possibly be? So I think that that's really the important thing that, you know, overall that you want to teach kids and to be confident and to believe in yourself. But so like you said, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to ask, as I'm thinking about this now, when you're having these conversations, these individual conversations with players, you know, every player is just different on a human level, and they're different as people. So in your experience in doing this, have you had to personally kind of adjust the way that you approach each conversation? And because some kids are maybe a little less willing to open up, some are a little bit more willing to open up. I imagine just who you have to be, obviously still being authentic and still being yourself, though you have to be kind of flexible with the way that maybe you build those relationships, knowing that every person on a human level is just a bit different.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, you really have to, you know, have a good understanding of the individual. You know, not every kid, you know, has dreams of going to the NBA. Some kids just love the game and love being a part of something. And there's nothing wrong with that at all, right? But, you know, when it comes to the standard and, you know, what the team needs from everybody, you know, that's one thing that I think as a coach you can't budge on. You know, hey, you know, you signed up to be, you know, on this team. You know, even if your role is not playing very much and, you know, you spend a lot of time on the, you know, on the bench, right? Your voice better be, you know, very raspy after the game. You know, your yeah. hands should be raw because, you know, you're clapping so much, you know? But yeah, you know, what position can you put them in and have them bought into their role that's going to help the team be successful? And, you know, it's definitely not all kids are, you know, I always had great relationships with my coaches and I had great coaches and, you know, not all kids are like that. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it definitely takes time with some kids building that relationship, and others it's pretty easy.
That's great. Just the concept of group dynamics, you know, I just kind of talked about the idea of everybody's kind of their own person, and you know, you're going to get teams, I'm sure, that will click right together and then they gel and they're friends. You're going to have others that process of bringing that group and bringing that team together is a bit tricky. So I wanted to give you kind of the platform to talk a little bit about What are some things that maybe our listeners might not really know about, you know, group behavior, group dynamics that maybe can help coaches out kind of understanding the way that like groups form and kind of come together?
You know, and that's a great question. You know, I started coaching basketball when I was 16, and now, you know, I'm 27, about to be 28. And there was 1 year between there that I didn't coach basketball. I graduated college and I had, you know, wanted to, use my business degree that I got. And, you know, I ended up becoming a manager at Walgreens in that year. And the one thing that I learned there was, even though I wasn't coaching basketball, I still had a team to lead. And a lot of those lessons that I learned are still the same in coaching. You know, the idea is the same, because there's statistics and numbers, you know, when it comes to tracking, you know, how successful your store is, right, that you're running. So trying to line up everyone's goals, you know, hey, individually, what's your goal, you know, as an employee, you know, oh, do you want a pay raise, you know, you want a promotion, you know, how do we get you there, right? That's no different than, you know, a basketball player trying to get more playing time and trying to be a better player, right? And then having the store goals, you know, like team goals win a championship. Store goals have, you know, 90%, you know, customer satisfaction, right? So these are things that we strive for individually, but also as a team. So I think that I learned valuable lessons in having that opportunity and having that experience, especially, you know, being, you know, 22, 23 years old, trying to, you know, manage a pharmacy retail store. You know, all my employees were older and, you know, I'm sure looked at me all different ways sometimes, but at the end of the day, you know, I would say I was successful in that position, and I apply those same concepts to coaching basketball. And I think that that's important. So, you know, aligning the team goals, what are we going to do and how are we going to get there? You know, the we over me mentality, yeah. Right? You know, in basketball, I never liked the players that we would win a game and they're upset because they only scored 4 points. You know, to me, that's crap. Yeah. You know, yeah. You know, like yeah. I would much rather, if I could win a game and not shoot the ball once, I'm taking the win. You know, that's yeah. just how my attitude is and how it always was. So, yeah. You know, really trying to, you know, better everyone.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of, you know, instances where I've seen where, you know, we've been fortunate enough to get some wins, and the player from the opposing team that lost just like rushes to the score table to see how it is that they did. And I was like, ooh, that makes me feel a little icky there. Like, I don't know what the culture or what's going on with that program when a player's doing that sort of thing. I don't want that at all on my team.
Oh, definitely not, you know. Oh, no. And that comes into teaching life lessons as well as teaching basketball. You know, you want good character. You want your kids to have good character, because – I coach kids to, you know, help them be the best version of themselves. You know, not every kid's going to the NBA, but how can they be the best in their community once their playing career is all said and done? So, you know, sometimes you're going to have hard conversations with kids, but, you know, if you really care, those hard conversations need to be had.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to ask about, you know, how in your experience of coaching, when groups, I guess, and programs, when groups kind of get tested, when there's adversity, whether it's practice, games, just the grind of a long season, and, you know, things get a little tough and things get a little difficult. What do you attribute to, you know, your the groups that you've worked with kind of sticking together and kind of handling that adversity versus kind of like turning in on each other? What kind of allows, in your opinion, those groups to kind of make sure that they stay strong through those, you know, adverse situations that are always going to come up during a season?
You know, and you're right about that. You know, I have seen, you know, in my years of basketball, I have seen so many different situations come up, you know, whether it be an injury bug, you know, you have 13 kids, now you have 6, whether it be, you know, kids wanting to quit because of their playing time. I think yeah. one thing that's very important is understanding that, you know, you're only as good as your weakest link. And, you know, that's how I approach coaching. And not only that, trying to find out who your leaders are early, I think, is very important as a coach. You know, your leaders might not always be your best players, but, you know, the one guy that, you know, the other guys can get around and they get behind and they follow, right? It's very important to have a good relationship with that player, because a lot of times maybe they don't always need to hear, you know, everything from me. If I can get the coaches or the players to coach themselves, that's the best, because I really think that player led teams end up being the most successful. If mm-hmm. I'm the coach, it's important for me to be consistent every day, right? The kids got to know what to expect from me. And that's very important. But if you can get the players to start getting the other players bought in, I think that's, you know, what makes it more effective. And with those individual meetings, you know, making time out to do that. I think when I was coaching high school, it was also easier to build these relationships because I was also teaching at that high school. So, yeah, you know, true. A lot of the times, you know, these kids, you know, they can't get away from me whether they want to or not, you know, but being there for them, you know, taking interest in things that, you know, maybe they take interest in off the court, genuinely getting to know them. And then that makes these individual meetings and these hard conversations easier. And I've definitely had my fair share of, you know, maybe there's one kid on the team that, you know, the players might not really care for, but that's still your family and that's still your brother. When times get tough and when we're battling, you know, in a game or during practice.
No, great. Appreciate you sharing that for sure. And it kind of mentioned that question that I was going to kind of lead to also about for coaches themselves too, you know, with these relationships that we build with our players and try to, you know, make sure that, you know, our players are where we want them to be and that they're in a good place themselves. You know, sometimes, you know, we hit this wall with some of our players where maybe there's, you know, a difficult interaction we had at a practice or something that was said in a game or, you know, a player's just frustrated and, you know, they don't really want to talk things out. They're just kind of, you know, stewing in it a little bit. What do you think coaches can kind of do to kind of overcome that, you know, figurative wall when maybe there's just that, you know, separation in that relationship and the relationship isn't as strong as maybe the coach or the player want it to be?
You know, and that's another great question. You know, like I said, you know, earlier about being consistent, you know, I tell kids too, you know, I'm never going to stop coaching you, you know, no matter what. Mm-hmm. And being there for them, being able to, you know, really try to see what's best for them, you know, on and off the court. I think one thing I've also learned as a life lesson myself, you know, no matter where I've lived and I've had the opportunity to, you know, live in many different states and, you know, meet so many different people. One thing that I've took away from that is that people sense when you're genuine. And that's one thing about me is if you know me personally, you know, I'm very genuine. Like I really believe in what I do. I believe in myself and I'm very passionate about what I do. And that's very obvious in the way that I talk about things, you know, especially when we're on the court. So being a very genuine and caring person goes a long way. And it does make these conversations, these difficult conversations, a lot easier. And sometimes, you know, if you have maybe like an individual that, you know, you're not getting through to, having, and it's all situational, but, you know, having the team run for individual mistakes, you know, because then now it's the kids getting on to you, not just it's your teammates getting on to you, not just coach, you know, like, oh, man, you know, coach doesn't like me, you know, coach is the worst, you know, having the team get onto them as well. But coming from a place of caring and understanding, you know, in today's society, you know, mental health, I think, is, you know, becoming a very important, you know, topic. And, sure, you know, having an understanding of, you know, what kids are going through and, you know, because sometimes maybe the issue isn't on the court. Maybe the issue isn't even with you. So being able to understand and dissect those situations are very important. And also as a coach, I want to save everybody. But
yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, you also got to have an understanding that structure and, you know, being able to save everybody is probably not going to happen.
Yeah, it's but like you said, right, you're never going to stop coaching them. You're never going to, like, you know, it's like you never give up on a person, right? You never give up on that person or on that player. But, you know, as you mentioned, sometimes there's, you know, things don't, you know, work out perfectly the way that you want them to do. And also, I'm sure you've had experiences too where you kind of have that wall or that what seems like that icy relationship with a player. But then, you know, whether it's the end of the year or just like, you know, later down the road, all of a sudden, like, that wall comes down and things are good. Because some players, you know, they're coming from all these other backgrounds where they don't necessarily like have trust, or maybe they don't have, you know, adults who they necessarily trust in their lives. And they're very, very hesitant and very cautious before they kind of let themselves down. And I'm sure you've probably had all variety of experiences like that, where maybe like one day, one year or something, it's like, oh, like, we're good now. Like, we kind of had that, you know, breakthrough a little bit later, a lot later, where, you know, compared to somebody else where maybe it happened sooner.
You know, definitely. And, you know, being able to put yourself in their shoes or try to at least, definitely helps. You know, there's definitely times looking back in my playing career that I disagreed with a coach and I didn't understand, you know, why certain things were taking place. And now, you know, I'm a little older and I can still reflect on those situations. And now it's like, hey, you know, that makes sense, you know? So sometimes you do have situations like that, but,
definitely. Let me ask you about the concept of like leaders and you know, it's such an interesting topic that I hear a lot in the high school coaching, circles as well, about, team captains and whether or not there's any merit or any of that really matters, if everyone can be, a leader or a captain and everyone's kind of has ownership, or, there's other coaches who have the mentality of like, oh, no, you want to have your leaders or have your leaders who are going to lead your guys or your girls. What's your kind of take on that idea of, team leaders or your captains like that? Is that something you personally have kind of believed in coaching wise?
Definitely. And, I like to establish one, as early as possible. It may not always be the most skilled kid, but, it's the kid that, you can rely on and you have a great relationship with and you can communicate with, and you can trust that they're able to, do the right things. And, you hold them accountable. I want my leaders, like, let's say if, an instance came up and I wasn't able to run practice, I want that leader to be someone that I could trust, that, could coach the practice. And I've definitely been thankful and, lucky enough, I've had, players like that, that I can trust in to be able to, do stuff like that. So that's very important.
What
But
was
also,
the process, if you don't mind me asking, about kind of identifying like right away who those are? Do they kind of stand out right away? Do you have to feel like you got to bring it out in them? What goes into that?
When you're at an established program too, like, let's say high school for an example, sometimes you can see it, younger in their careers, and then as they get older and, get up to varsity, you can see it, early, but, normally the kid that plays the hardest, and does what you ask them to do, and, is a good person off the court, I think that's important. That they're always doing the right thing. And from a psychology standpoint too, I think it's important for a coach to not only have a leader, but to be hard on your leader, someone that wants to be coached and someone that embraces coaching. And the team, from a psychology and group dynamic standpoint, if they see you, getting on to the leader, or, being tough on, one of your better players, it paints that picture of accountability. Like, kids know their role. They might not always admit it, but deep down, I think kids understand, their basketball abilities and where they line up. So helping to paint a picture of that role. But if you're tough on your hardest player, it will help. And it's got to be a player that can take criticism. It's not always easy, but it definitely helps paint the whole picture of accountability.
And well, to that point about, sometimes it is, players who take criticism a certain way. I think that's also where those weekly meetings you talk about kind of come into play, where, if you feel like a player is getting frustrated, or maybe they feel like, they're being, treated a certain way, kind of let them know, about, your expectations for them as like the leader and as the role model there, that they also are going to be the ones that are kind of treated and pushed the hardest, because then everybody else in the team knows, oh man, if, this guy or this girl is clearly, our most talented player is, being held to this highest standard, then there's no excuse for the rest of us, sort of thing.
Oh, 100%, 100%. You nailed it. And also too, in those individual meetings, don't be afraid as a coach to ask, how can I be a better coach for you? Like, what can I do? Because sometimes you got people that will tell you what they think you want to hear, or tell you what, they think they should say. But, you really want those individual meetings to be a safe place and safe spot. And I think having that ability, when I'm coaching, I coach. Like, I'm locked in, I'm doing what I need to do as a coach. But off the court, I'm very easygoing, and I like to laugh, joke, and have fun. I always pick on the kids that I coach, and they always feel free to give it back. And I think being able to, see each other in that light, when you're not always, yelling and coaching, is great for the kids as well. Coach is a human, so that's good for them to see.
Sometimes it's surprising to our players to hear that, though, that we are human. We are human beings and everything. Now, the little caveat to that, and I certainly agree, though, is also as a coach, though, make sure, and it's hard, but if you're going to allow your players to suggestions or criticize or whatever, like as a coach, you got to listen, and you don't want to argue back. Listen to them and take in what it is that they're saying, because it may be something you really do need to hear, and it could be painful sometimes. I mean, maybe you can speak to it. Sometimes you hear some things that make you wince a little bit, but I think if you want to be a great coach, you got to kind of take that ego away a little bit, even though it's hard.
Oh, definitely. And that's why, I also enjoy, you know, talking with parents and having a good relationship with parents. That's very, very important, especially if you're at, you know, the high school level. You know, because sometimes parents, they might not always know everything about basketball, but they pick up on things and they have a certain perspective that, you know, it maybe it's refreshing to hear. And it's a way that maybe you didn't look at things, but, you know, it's like that outsider looking in type perspective. So I always enjoy hearing that, especially, you know, from, you know, the parents that might not know a lot about basketball, but, you know, they can say, ooh, you know, your kids are bought in. Like, you guys are just like a way more together team, you know, comments like that go a long way.
Yeah, no, I love those. I love it, especially when it's like, especially from sometimes like parents or from some outsiders, people who just can only look at your program at like a quick glance, and maybe they're only around for, you know, a game or a few minutes, but the fact that they can like pick up on it right away, it's like, man, if it stands out that easily in just a few minutes or at a quick glance, like you have to feel like you're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, 100%. Those are definitely the best.
So let me ask you about things that you think coaches can do to intentionally bring up a positive atmosphere to their program and in that positive state of mind. What would you recommend coaches are intentionally planning, intentionally scheduling, intentionally doing to make sure that things are staying positive and things are staying on the right track?
Awesome question. And, you know, I'm a big believer in the power of positivity. I'm a big believer in, you know, the energy that, like, you know, you may give off as a coach. You know, if you're a nervous coach, if you're unsure of yourself, you know, your kids are going to be a little nervous in crunch time. You know, but there's a lot that you can do to build positivity. You know, if I'm going to get onto a kid, you know, let's say, you know, I got a kid who, you know, isn't working hard on defense or something like that. You know, I will talk with them a lot about the things that they are good at. And then, you know, hit them with the, but, you know, hey, we got to work a little harder on defense, you know, because it's not easy. People don't like hearing what they're not good at. And that's just a human nature thing. You know, it's not always easy, you know, depending on the kid and the situation. But, you know, as a coach too, it's your job to put them in situations to be successful. So, you know, if I have a kid who can shoot, but, you know, can't really do much else, you know, I'm probably not going to have him be the one bringing the ball up the court. Right. So teaching kids confidence, teaching them to believe in themselves and, you know, being positive. I think there's a lot that you can do in practices and in games. You know, I'm a big believer in, you know, psychology, like how are we going to win a game and maybe punk out the other team before the game even starts? You know, I'm big on energy and having loud warmups, you know, and I've seen this at every level. You know, the team that, you know, they're hooting and hollering and, you know, they're having fun and, you know, they're flying around during warmups and, you know, the other team's just kind of lazily doing layups. You know, normally that team, they're going to come out and punch you in the mouth. So I'm big on that and how we bring energy in practice. I'm big on clapping and noise being made of some sort. You know, I like loud practices. To me, a loud practice is a good practice. You know, I want to be able to walk into a school and, you know, the gym's on the other side of the floor, but I can hear a good practice, you know? So stuff like that. And then I think too, you know, psychologically, you know, I'm a big believer in the huddle, the team huddle before free throws or during free throws. Just check in with each other real quick. You know, free throw goes up. Okay. Whether they're on the defensive side or the offensive side, just huddle up real quick, just touch base, you know, just talk about it, you know, calm each other down, be there for each other. That to me is definitely the most underlooked part of basketball. And I think teams that do stuff like that generally are more successful. There's a lot that goes into that, you know, so I make sure that they huddle up in situations like that. And it's just, maybe sometimes it's a quick, hey, you know, let's try this next time. Or, you know, just, hey, you know, you're doing great. You know, it's okay that you had that turnover, you know, we'll get it back, you know, but say something positive to each other. I think that little thing goes a long way.
It sounds like for you too, as a coach, like you're always, it seems, have, as you kind of talked about, that positivity on the front of your mind. And I imagine players have to get a sense of, you know, comfort or get a sense of a confidence about that when they know that, you know, their coach is upbeat, their coach is bringing energy, that there's an excitement level there, because I'm sure you've seen it too, where, you know, you could see kind of the programs or see the teams that, you know, hit that panic button, and then the coaches look panicked and they look frazzled or they're upset. And then, you know, the body language gets really bad. And it sounds like to me, like your players definitely can kind of feed off that, you know, confidence and positivity that you exude, and know that, like, you know, coach isn't ever going to kind of lose the plot or lose his way, so to speak.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, and it goes into that buy-in and that trust, you know, especially late game situations. You know, my kids know that, you know, I'm going to put us in the best situation to be successful. And, you know, and I've been fortunate enough to have such great kids that I've got to coach that, you know, they've always been bought in and, you know, they've always, you know, had faith and have always believed. And that's so important. And, you know, the families and how they're raised, you know, I've always, you know, for the most part, I've always had coached kids that come from great families. And, you know, don't overlook that, you know, because we talk about being a good human and how that relates to being a good basketball player. If you can handle stuff off the court, you know, stuff on the court will take care of itself sometimes.
Yeah.
So being very thankful.
For sure. That's awesome. The practices that you run or help run, how much of this intentional, like making sure that there's a lot of like group work, making sure that there's a lot of time for players to be, you know, communicating, working together, building on those team skills. Is that something that needs to intentionally be planned, or is that just kind of a byproduct of all the other stuff that you just happen to be working on in a practice?
You know, with how passionate I am, you know, I spend a lot of time, you know, with psychology, right? You know, thinking about what I'm going to do the next practice, right? You know, practice ends and, you know, I'm already thinking about, okay, can we do this? Can we do that? Is there certain drills we can do? You know, if certain kids have, you know, beef with each other, you know, I'm going to pair them up in a drill where they have to talk to each other and work together, right? Stuff like that. Oh, I apologize. I forgot where I was going with that. But, you know, stuff like...
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. You know, stuff like, you know, like if a player takes a charge, you know, help that player up. You know, I'm big on that, you know, stuff like that. So, like, if I don't have everyone rushing, you know, to that player, we're going to start running, you know, and stuff like that because kids don't like running. You know, if we can't go, you know, if we don't huddle during a free throw, right, we're going to run for that, you know. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, if a player hits the ground, and some coaches really emphasize that, especially in a game, go get your teammate. You know, that's your teammate. That's your brother. You know, if not, we're running for that. You know, I think that's a very important aspect, too, and things that you can do in practice to help build that.
I like that idea of kind of like whole team, you know, consequences, positive or otherwise, because I've been through experiences as a coach where I can even have felt that I've almost like personally like ostracized a player, or just got on a player and didn't really have the whole team be a part of whatever that discussion was and just kind of singled on that one player. And man, you know, I just think of some of those instances, you know, where I'm just, you know, ripping into a player for, you know, this, that, or whatever. And I just feel, you know, I can almost feel that player slipping away from me because I could tell that it's just like, oh, like, you know, they're shut down, they're done. And, you know, then the team doesn't really understand, you know, how they're all a part of that because I'm just on this one player. And so like that intentional of like, you know, everything affects everyone sort of thing. Like I think is, it probably has to, and I mean, I know this, like it definitely creates a healthier program and a healthier team when it's everyone, you know, as one.
Oh, definitely. You know, we win as a team, we lose as a team. And
I think that's the
big picture. You know, you don't lose a game because, you know, Johnny missed the last second, you know, shot at the buzzer. You know, you don't lose a game because of that. No, there's everything that went into it. You know, if you're a kid that maybe didn't play much and your energy was horrible on the bench, you know, you're going to hear it from me too. You know, like we're all accountable and we're all in this together. And at the end of the day, no matter what our role is, did everyone do the best that they could do and give their best individual performance? You know, I think that's extremely important.
Yeah, no, definitely. Awesome. That's really, really good. I wanted to ask about, you know, a couple more things here as I'm trying to, you know, formulate a couple questions here related to some program buy-in. Are there at the college level, when you think about players that are recruitable, players that are you're gonna bring into the college level, are you able to kind of like even get that sense about, oh, I think this guy or this girl is definitely going to be a team player. I can tell that this person has the you know, the we before me mentality. Can those things kind of be picked up on a recruiting level?
You know, and that's a good question. You know, sometimes that's tough to answer because, you know, you might not know who you're truly getting as a recruit until, you know, they show up for practice day one for you at your, you know, college level. Mm. And also, too, I think that there's, you know, psychologically, I think that there's differences in the level of college at which you're coaching at. You know, JUCO is very different than, you know, Division II basketball or Division III basketball. But one piece of advice that I got from a D1 women's coach that I had the chance to pick her brain for a little bit, she said a good recruiting tip that she does is she talks to opposing coaches about that player.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I thought that was very interesting. But the point that she made is that no one's going to give you a realer intake on what that player is like than the opposing coach. And, you know, for me, like that really kind of, you know, changed my perspective on things. And that's definitely something that, you know, I look into doing more now, you know, if I get the opportunity to, you know, some coaches may just never get back to you. Why is this guy asking me about, you know, they're from a different team, you know, but most of the time when you do get a response, you know, it's, oh man, coach, that girl's a killer. You know, you definitely are going to wonder if she's a great teammate, but the other coach, you know, is going to see things that, you know, other people don't always see.
And the reason I ask that is because, you know, that it's just one of those things that anything that I think a high school player can do to kind of stand out or separate themselves. Of course, they all have their, you know, their huddle and their mixtape and all these other things, their highlight tape and all these other stuff, maybe a mixtape too, actually. But, you know, just those little things about whether or not they're, you know, somebody who's going to fit in a program, right? Because you could speak to that, you know, you're trying to find players that fit into, you know, your culture and what it is that you're trying to do. And that, you know, if a coach can sense that, okay, this person's somebody who can I can bring right into the fold and they're gonna be bought in and ready to go, that could be a huge difference compared to somebody who they might be a little unsure about that on.
You know, 100%. And I tell kids all the time, you know, everyone looks good in highlight tape. You know, that's why it's a highlight tape, you know, but coaches at the next level, we want to see game film, you know, full game film. You know, and I'm paying more attention to, you know, how they are on the bench, how they are treating their teammates, how are they in warmups. You know, to me, that stuff goes, you know, a long ways. And, you know, I've heard stories of, you know, coaches that are really higher up at the next level and they really focus on that stuff as well. You know, because I think deep down as coaches, we believe that we can teach you the skills right on the court to be successful. You know, I believe in me as a coach, like I can work with you on your jumper. You know, I can teach you how to become a better defender. Right. But some things as far as being a good person, how they are when they treat people, some of that stuff is instilled from, you know, how they were brought up in their environment, and you can't always win those battles as a coach.
Yeah. And, you know, and with the landscape of the way college recruiting is right now, you know, if there's that, you know, if you feel like you're going to have to fight, you know, to get a player to be bought in, and you're going to have to, you know, put all this energy and time, you know, so for some coaches, like, I just don't have the time maybe to invest in that, you know, like others would, and they'll move on to somebody else. And it's kind of tough. And it's kind of, you know, unfortunate, but that just kind of reaffirms to me, you know, everything that I say we as, you know, me as a high school coach and high school coaches, you know, to make sure that we're doing these things at the high school level, at the younger level, these meetings, you know, and these intentional ways to like bring groups and bring teams together, because you know, never know who might be watching a player and who might be looking at a player. And, you know, just, I think it's a great practice for teenagers, right. To have, you know, those meetings and make sure they're part of a positive, you know, group dynamic. But especially on the recruiting method for coaches to know, like, oh, you know, this person came from a program with a lot of positive culture and they came in a good, you know, group dynamic. And this is the type of person or the type of person we're looking for. At least, you know, that's what I hope so.
And teaching kids to have their own voice, very important too, you know, like when you do these individual meetings, you know, if they can't, you know, speak their mind to, you know, right, to me as a coach, you know, someone who's there and is not going to judge you and is always going to be there for you no matter what, on and off the court, if you can't have, you know, tough conversations with me, the real world's going to be really tough whenever, you know, you're working a job and you have a family, right? So all these life lessons on and off the court, I try to make as many life lessons as I can, and I think that's important to the kids as well.
Love it. No, that's phenomenal. It's really encouraging to hear. Let me ask you before we hit our concluding segment about ideas that you have for off season. You know, as this episode comes out, we'll be deep in the off season, maybe headed closely here into summer. What do you think is important to make sure that time is being used well to kind of bring your team and bring groups together?
Obviously, communication and staying in touch with them, right? If you've got a bunch of new players coming in, I'm going to be very big this year on, having conversations with them and checking in with them. How's your progress going? Obviously, sending them, workout plans and all that stuff. But as far as returning players go, you need to have that time to, right once the season ends, immediately give them, a week or two to collect their thoughts. But then, you need those conversations of, what went well, what didn't work well. How can we get you as a staff to where you need to be? How can we, make you better? Like, what are your goals? What are your thoughts? What are your feelings? Having these intense and, important conversations can really go a long way. But, returners, how can we get you where you need to be? And newcomers, how can we get you, to the best of your ability? I've seen it a lot of times. If you don't check in on kids, you recruit a kid and then, they sit on the couch all summer and, eat potato chips and then they show up and that's not the same kid that, you
What
thought you were
happened?
getting, and it does happen. But checking in, very important. Conversations, communications, very important.
You don't want to let a player go too long away from you, right? You want to make sure, like, I'm still here. You know, maybe we're not I don't see each other every day, but I haven't forgotten about you. And that's powerful too, right? Like, for a player to still know, like, hey, like, I know that, you know, my coach is still going to check in on me and make sure things are good and how I'm doing. Like, they don't just care about me as a basketball player. You know, when there's downtime and, you know, it's in the off season and maybe I have a little bit more free time, they're still going to just make sure everything's going well. And that means a lot to a player if it comes from a place of sincerity.
Definitely. I still got kids I coached, 5, 6 years ago. Hey, they're getting that Merry Christmas text from me on Christmas. I had one reach out, to me the other day. They moved to a different state and they won their second high school championship back to back. And as a
Great.
coach, obviously it's great to hear from them. And it's like, hey man, I hope all is well. Obviously that they know that you care about them more as a basketball player.
That's so cool. That's awesome. To wrap up, Coach, there's a couple questions that I ask every guest. Starting with this first one, which is thinking back on your coaching career. What is a moment from your coaching career that you went through and that you experienced that you think by sharing our listeners would be able to learn from?
Well, I believe I got into coaching, for the right reasons. For me, I was so blessed to have coaches that loved and cared about me as a person and helped make me the man that I am today. And, I've always wanted to be that for kids, if they'll buy in and they'll give me the chance to help them out. And I've always felt like my biggest downfall as a coach is that sometimes I truly believe in the kids more than they believe in themselves. And, as I mentioned earlier, I think one lesson that I think is important to learn is that, you're not going to be able to help every kid in every situation. I think not too long ago, there was a kid I knew and he played basketball hard. He played hard. And he was a good kid, easy to talk to. Fun to coach at times. And I knew his home life, wasn't the best. And he was a little rough around the edges. He was a football player trying out for basketball, definitely a football player. You could see it in him. But I gave him a shot, and I believed in him, and at the end of the day, it didn't work out. I still ended up having a good relationship with the kid. And we both decided that, it was right for us to go our separate ways. I believed in him, gave him a shot, and it didn't end negatively, but it just didn't work out. And at the end of the day, as much as you would love to, you can't help everybody. They gotta want it as well.
And you know, I think it's tough because I almost think every coach kind of has that experience too. And unfortunately, I feel like even if you haven't yet, you might still have that experience. But it's almost I don't know. I don't know. It kind of sounds maybe funny, but maybe in a way, it's kind of reassuring or reaffirming that we kind of all go through this as coaches, right? We kind of all have that experience eventually that you do. It's like, and to me, kind of what I learned is because I've had that experience as well, is like, hey, like this is something that could happen or may will happen, but like you're not alone in it. And maybe there's some comfort in that. I'm not too sure. I take some, though I think there's so many tough experiences that we go through as coaches, or things that we think like, man, does this only happen to me? Or am I the only one who goes through this? And I think the answer is always no.
Definitely. There's a lot of coaches out there.
Coach, to wrap up, I give every guest what I call a 60-second soapbox, but I'm not going to time you. So don't worry if you go over 60 seconds, but it's your platform to get out kind of a final message, a final thought, a closing idea, anything that you have on your mind that you want to leave the listeners with. Coach, I'm going to go ahead and let you take the floor, and I'm going to go ahead and let you just take it from here.
Hey, thank you very much. And, as always, I really appreciate the opportunity and you having me on here. I thought it was funny at first. I read the questions and, we got ready for the podcast and I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to talk for an hour. But here we are going over an hour. And it's been an awesome experience. So thank you to that. But one thing that I think is important to me, and at different levels you coach at, you're going to have different numbers and statistics, but I'm very big on numbers and statistics, like I talked about earlier. Use numbers to help make coaching decisions. Obviously at the college level, you can get really advanced statistics, but even though, I love the kids I coach and sometimes tough love is still love. When it comes to making decisions in game, I more so run, that like a business. And also too, when we talk about these individual conversations, right? Sometimes, there's a kid, he's frustrated with his playing time. And maybe being able to be like, look, you're supposed to be my point guard, but you have a negative assist to turnover ratio, and having numbers and stats available can sometimes help kids understand what you're trying to do as a coach and helps them understand the why and why you make certain decisions. As a point guard, your job is to take care of the basketball and to get others involved, right? So maybe I'm having a conversation with a kid, hey, you got a negative assist to turnover ratio, so it's tough to play you in certain situations. And that way it really helps paint the picture. And also too, I think as a coach, if you listen to the numbers, you won't be second guessing any decisions, because you can say as a coach, hey, we got a technical foul and I just put my best free throw shooter out there. That's the person that's shooting 90%, they're going to take those free throws. It takes If you run it like a business, it really takes a lot of the, it makes decisions easier, I would say. So that's my biggest thing. Numbers are important. Stats are important. If you get the chance to, have stats or do stats yourself as high school, as I'm sure a lot of the high school coaches are doing. I know I did it, rewatched a lot of games and took stats myself, to have those numbers. So it helps you make decisions and it also helps paint the picture, for kids of why you make these decisions. And once they understand that, you'll get a lot less attitude and issues.
Awesome. That was great, Coach. I really like that you left off on that note, because I think that's something I may have needed to hear. So yeah, the way that you kind of broke that down, using that business analogy. No, that was great. I think I needed that. Coach, I really appreciate you coming on and having this great talk about psychology, mentality, group dynamics, buying in with programs. I mean, I love that this one's going to come out. Off season for a lot of high school coaches who can maybe use this to, reinvigorate their programs and make sure that, they're going into the summer and going the off season next year, with their group bonds that much stronger. So, Coach, keep doing all the great stuff that you're doing. Excited to follow along on the Fort Scott journey, and thank you so much for your time. This was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. I hope you have a great night, and hopefully, maybe we can do this again.
Love to. Thank you guys so much for listening. This was another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. We will see you guys next time.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Basketball Teacher Podcast. Make sure to connect with us on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter, or reach us directly through email at basketballteacherpodcast@gmail.com. Take care, be safe, and we'll see you next time.